All right. Let's talk about the language that we use as we continue build on or start, hopefully not for many of you, the use of statistics and probability. As with any mathematics type discipline, there's a certain set of language that we are going to use over and over again. And hopefully they become an intuitive part of your vocabulary. And let's take a look at them. The basic idea in statistical terms is a handful of concepts that are buried in those. And we'll dive in and understand a couple of these things, but there are also parts that are commonly tested in the CRE exam. It's a way to get after these concepts and making sure that you have a very solid grounding in the concepts and the application of those concepts. And it's often done by checking your vocabulary. And so it's more than just memorize things, these things. It's understand them, practice them, see them in the real world. And so, as I've mentioned in the early parts of this course, the best way to learn this stuff is to practice it. And so to talk about these terms and techniques and procedures and concepts, but also try them. You know, group data and label it correctly, and set up probability questions and solve them. Set up hypothesis tests and run those. Calculate confidence intervals and put them on a graphic. Those terms all have specific meanings, and we'll get into those here directly. So we're going to talk about samples and populations throughout this course. Now, most of the time when we're creating, say, a product, and let's say we're going to make a medical device of which there's going to be 50 systems made per year. So the population for the year is those 50 items. Now, the population of humans on the planet, and I don't remember what the latest number is, but it's in the billions, is everybody, let's say, that's alive today. Now notice that each time I'm trying to define a population, I still create some characteristics or caveats or defining terms about that population. So our population can be the people in the room. It can be the grains of sand on the beach in Hawaii, for example. Or it can be whatever we want to define it. And it's usually something that we can count or group or collect of some sort or another. It doesn't always have to be, but it can be. But the population is usually the all of something. Not always. It could be the population of just redheaded people in the room right now. In my room where I'm recording this, I'm the only one, and I have more of a salt and pepper hair color. So there's zero in the population of redheaded people in the room. Now, population has generally been the characteristic about the all of something. So all of our production, all of our future production would be considered parts of our population, and that's fine. Now, sometimes we're not able to measure everything in the population. So if the population was all people on the planet and we wanted to know their weight, it's really not feasible to ask everybody to get on a scale today and report it. It's hard enough to get parts of the population to go to the polls and vote or do any of the census type activities. So let's say we want to get an estimate of the average weight of the entire population. Well, in that case, we take a sample. We take a subset of that defined population, and then we make our measurements on that. And then as we make those measurements, then, so if the population is the all of something, let's see if I can get my circle working here, I'm going to take a sample, which might be just some pockets of this, a few samples, a few people randomly selected from out of the population. We'll get into random selection here in a few minutes. But it's from that sample that I then make a conclusion or a statement about the population. So based on the sample we took, if it was done correctly and we have sufficient numbers of people in the sample, we probably have a reasonable estimate of the, say, average weight of the population. So it's one way to think of these two terms. Population is the larger group, and a sample is a subgroup that allows us to make an inference or a meaningful statement about something about that population. Now, the two other terms that are on this slide are statistics, which is what we're commonly called a course that we take, and then parameter. And you may have heard both of these terms in various ways. But a parameter is the average would be the mean value of a population, say, height. But if we used a sample, that mean height now is a statistic. It's the X bar. Now, commonly for means, we use mu, or Greek letters, for the population, and Roman characters for the statistics, for the sample elements, the statistics. So X bar might be a statistic that gives us the mean value. Standard deviation, mean X bar S for standard deviation, and sigma for the population the parameter for the population's standard deviation. So it's in the exam, you have to read the question carefully to know if you're dealing with a population or with a sample. And we'll touch on where that makes the biggest difference a bit later. So anyway, we deal with statistics, the estimates about parameters, when we're taking a sample to talk about a population. If we can measure everything, if we're doing 100% measurement of, say, the components we're making, we're dealing with parameters and populations. But if we're only doing a sampling, or doing a subset is another way of phrasing that, then we're dealing with statistics. So a little bit of semantics, a little bit of fine separation between these things, but it becomes important with the number of the calculations that we're going to be asked to do. Now, there's a handful of distributions, and we're going to talk about these in more detail later in the course. But there's two basic kinds of distributions and a handful of distributions that we deal with on our ongoing basis within reliability and within quality and in most engineering disciplines. The biggest separation, though, is whether a distribution is discrete or continuous. So discrete would be the boxes in the warehouse, right? Units ready to ship. Vehicles in the parking lot. Now, it's items that are based on counting. I can go out and physically count all of the cars. And there's not, well, most neighborhoods anyway, there's not a half a car sitting in the parking lot. It's not a one-tenth of a car doesn't make sense if we're talking, or 1/16th of your product doesn't have much meaning. So we call that attribute data. And it usually is meaning that it's a count of some kind. It could be a classification, but it generally we think of it as a count. Discrete items, individual items is one way to think of it. For continuous data, it's variable data. Things like time and length and weight. Given a fine enough scale, we could find it. Go down to an infinite level of precision on these things. Practicality, we don't measure time much beyond nanoseconds. And most of our applications, in some cases, it might actually be by hours or by months. Length and weight, it depends on what scale of precision that we're interested in. But if you really wanted to, you could get down into very precise and go to as many decimals as you wanted to and say the length of something in meters. So it's things that where an eighth or a half makes sense, then it's typically a continuous variable. So if I have 6 feet of a length and cutting that in half would be 3 feet, that's still a length. That still makes sense. Or if I take a working product and I say, how many working products do I have? And I have 10. And if I cut that number in half, now I have, an individual unit. If I have an individual unit and I cut it in half, it doesn't make sense to talk about a half a unit. Now, we deal with decimals and fractions with attribute data when we're averaging and doing things like that. When rolling a dice, a six-sided dice has 6 individual faces and it creates discrete data. But it's on average, we might roll a 3.5. But the 3.5 isn't one of the faces of the sides of the dice. There isn't a 3.5. That might be an easier way to separate these, the attribute data. But the if it was continuous variable, a 3.5 on a scale of 1 to 6 still makes sense. We could have that result show up on the reading we're making. And so if we had various lengths between 1 and 6 meters, a 3.5 makes sense. Where if we had discrete data, sides of the dice, where we had 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, a 3.5 doesn't correspond to any one particular face of that die. So hopefully I haven't confused you too much. Let me know in the comments or questions if any of this isn't clear. So let's go back to this idea of random sample. So this concept of taking a sample from a population, almost everything we do is predicated on that it's a random sample. And it means that the samples we take are going to represent the probability of them being chosen. So if you have something that's, a normal distribution, and you're taking samples, you would expect more of your samples to be taken near the average value, the mean value, than out at the tails, than the ones that are 4, 5, 6 standard deviations away from the mean, given a normal distribution. Now, that basic concept comes to apply in lots of different applications, but let's say we're taking a not random sample. If we went out and very deliberately took only the best working units, we went off and did a bunch of examination and inspection and testing and created a sample of only units that worked. And we use that as a representative sample, quote, air quotes around representative, and gave that to somebody that was going to buy our components or our parts. They would get a misleading perception of how good the parts were. Now, if we gave them truly a random sample that represented the population that we provide, then it would include the ones that don't work, probably part of the reason and motivation behind going off and doing pre-inspection before shipping. Now, there's nothing wrong with providing samples to customers that actually work. It's just something that you should, you know, if that's important that they get working samples, then some extra work to make sure that happens makes sense. But if they're using that sample to make a judgment about the population, then it does need to be a representative sample. It needs to be essentially a random sample. So one way to think about this is not just, we've got a set of numbers here on the screen, 1 through 9. So I want you to pick a random number. So don't use Excel, don't use anything else. Just you as your student, pick a number. And go ahead and write it down in the comment section and or on a piece of paper locally. All right? Shouldn't take too long. It's only one number out of 9 or 10 or however many I got on there. Yeah, 9 numbers. So pick one. Okay? Now, if we were doing a true random sample with lots and lots of people in the course, and say over time, we would expect an equal chance for every number to be selected. And that would represent that I have a uniform distribution for our random selection of these numbers. So every number in this group, for given no other prioritization, would be an even equal chance of all of them being selected. And that's the concept of a random sample. If I'm going off down to the production line and I need to select 100 samples, if I take them all in one group, they may be related to each other. They might be part of a good set of production, or they might be an offset as a bad part of production as that system fluctuates. Whereas if I'm trying to represent the population, I need to think through, well, what causes variation in those components? Is it throughout the day, or is it throughout the week, or throughout the month? Is it from a single line that represents all the variation, or is it from multiple lines? How do I get a sample that will represent the total population? And so that's part of the trick. So picking the number. Now, if everybody picks a truly random number, and we would expect it to be a uniform distribution, an equal number of selections for each one. Now, if you picked five random numbers, right, just write them down and get yourself an idea of how you spread out the numbers. And it's a little bit more, a second level to this experiment. All right, get those numbers down. All right, what I've typically found in working with students live over the years is that I would just ask, pick a number between 1 and between 0 and 10, numbers 1 through 9, and pick those. And also there was a study out of England, a university there, I think it was the sociology department, was looking at random samples, and they did a series of experiments where they've asked people to pick a random number. And what they found was the numbers. Let's see if I can get my pen back here. The numbers 3 and 7 were the most frequently randomly picked numbers. And then a lot of people have seen or heard of this thing, and they think of 3 or they think of 7 and go, well, that's picked all the time. Let me make it really random. So then they pick the ones closest to those. Very few people pick the tails. And some of this is biased off of, I don't know what. I don't know why 3 and 7 have such a preference. And I found that there's a little more preference for 8 in Asia. But 8 is considered a lucky number, whereas 7 is considered a lucky number in the Western countries. So it's, if you're going to go do a random sample, don't just pick them yourself. Don't just write down the random numbers yourself. We are really, really bad at making random numbers. So use Excel or use a random number generator of some sort. And there's all kinds of good tools for doing that. And it doesn't take much time. But the likelihood of you getting a sample that is truly random and represents your population takes two parts. One is having random numbers. And two is thinking through where you're collecting the sample. Is it representative of all the various sources of variation that you want to study or understand based on that sample? So the idea of a random sample, as I mentioned at the onset of this discussion, is a basis for much of the reliability statistics, much of the statistics in general, but in particular reliability statistics. Now, it's an underlying assumption in almost everything we do, anytime you're picking a sample. So in product development, when we're doing prototypes, those are samples for our future production population of units we're going to make. It's not always possible to get a truly random sample because we haven't even made anything in the population yet in that particular case. Yet, it's something to keep in mind is that how sensitive is the analysis you're doing to having a good random sample? And we'll touch on random samples throughout the sections on statistics. So hopefully a couple of terms, parameter and statistics, sample and population, random samples are really basic things and fairly well understood. But it's foundational knowledge. Now, in the next segment, we're going to get into a bit more of this, a little bit of a couple of the laws or or not laws. In the next section, we're going to talk about central tendency. The mean value or average value is what we commonly call it. But we'll talk about it in a little, explore some more of the basic language that's involved.